Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Twenty-seven years ago, a remarkable moment played out on TV screens across the country.
During this period at the Department of Education, my working relationship with Judge Thomas was positive. I had a good deal of responsibility and independence. I thought he respected my work and that he trusted my judgment.
Anita Hill testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee. She said Clarence Thomas, the man nominated to become the next Supreme Court Justice, had sexually harassed her when he supervised her in two different government jobs.
After approximately 3 months of working there, he asked me to go out socially with him. What happened next and telling the world about it are the two most difficult things, experiences of my life.
Now, as Christine Blasey Ford accuses Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexually assaulting her as a teenager, the nation is living through this moment again. This is The Takeaway. I'm Amy Walter. And today on the show, we ask, in 27 years, how far have we come? We begin this hour with a woman who knows what it's like to come forward with allegations of abuse and assault.
We have new information this morning about former presidential aide Rob Porter.
New questions about what the Trump administration did or did not do.
Mr. President, do you have a message to domestic violence victims?
The director of the FBI today seemed to dispute the White House timeline.
Information was still coming to the White House Personnel Security Office in February.
The office had not completed the data gathering for Porter's security clearance.
Kelly approved giving Porter an expanded role in the White House.
Story was being told as though I was a third-party object.
Jenny Willoughby is a writer and public speaker. She's also the ex-wife of Rob Porter. A few months into the Trump presidency, reports surfaced from a girlfriend that Porter was physically abusive. Jenny and another ex-wife, Colby Holderness, spoke out about the abuse they endured at his hand. Photos circulated of Colby with a black eye. Porter denied the accusations, but Jenny says while married, her husband was physically and emotionally abusive and at multiple points threatened her. I asked her what it feels like to watch Dr. Christine Blasey Ford's story play out on the national stage.
My immediate reaction was to reach out to connections that I had at the Washington Post, asking to be put in contact with her, and I sent her a personal email just letting her know that I had an inkling of what she was about to be up against and what she probably was undoubtedly facing in terms of attacks and threats from social media, and wanted to let her know that I was there for her.
Did she respond back to you?
No. I can only imagine how overwhelmed she is by media requests and family and everything like that. And so I was just happy to be able to have that out there so that she would know that there was somebody who had been through something similar and had her back.
I want to talk about your specific experience and what it was when you came forward and what compelled you to do that and what was it like?
Something that I think a lot of the public lost or was misinformed on was that I somehow came forward willingly and voluntarily at that moment in order to share my story. And that is not exactly how it happened. I had actually written a blog post as anonymously as I could, in that it didn't include Rob's name or my name to link me to him. And that had happened almost a year before the media got a hold of that blog post. And it was political enemies or people that were seeking to destroy Rob who then leaked that to the media and told them to investigate into his previous marriages. And so the reason that I, quote unquote, came forward was because they had my words. They had what I had written in that blog post, and they could take it and they could make it whatever they wanted to, they being the media or the powers that be. And for me, it was important to make sure that I was the voice behind what was being said. And I actually had reached out to Colby, Rob's first ex-wife, and let her know on Facebook that I had been contacted by the media and that I was planning on speaking about it in order to take ownership of my story. And she backed me 100% and said, you know, I've got your back. Let's go for it.
how long did you wrestle with the idea of coming forward and talking about this rather than saying this is something that I can't do this publicly?
It was a couple of days. Actually probably longer than that, because Rob had let me know about a little more than a week before reporters contacted me that they would be reaching out, that this was a possibility. And I kind of thought in the back of my mind, well, you know, I'll just let him have it. I'll tell him it's true. I was naive. I had no idea the magnitude of what it was going to be like when that story actually broke. And so when I was first contacted by reporters, it was at least 2 days of going back and forth, of talking to close friends, of conferring with Colby about what she felt we would be up against and what we'd be prepared to speak on, and realized that I had nothing to be ashamed of. I had nothing to hide, and I was, as best I could be, ready and willing to take the attacks and the questions on what I had to say, because I knew that I had truth on my side.
What were people around you, those close to you, telling you to do, or the advice that they were giving you?
To be honest, I actually really isolated myself in the midst of all of that. And one of the only people that I was conferring with was Colby, because I knew that she was going through the same thing as me. And I knew that she was going to be giving me advice that had my best interests at heart. And she was really a backbone and a helpmeet in terms of walking me through when we were both completely, you know, the media in our face, unable to leave our house, seeing our names and our faces all over television. She was right there with me, sort of figuratively holding my hand through the phone.
For you, for Dr. Ford, for Anita Hill, all three of you have said somewhat of the same thing, that this was unexpected. You didn't plan on doing this. This was not anything you had wanted to do or asked to do, but ultimately did come forward. Can you help us understand how you go through that process? Because I can completely understand why you would not want to come forward and deal with a barrage of publicity and attack and intensity and the microscope into your life. So how do you decide to do that?
This is probably the part of watching Dr. Ford's narrative unfold that has been so hard for me, because I do understand where she's coming from, and I do understand how impactful this is on her life, but also how necessary this is for her healing, that the desire to heal and to have the truth be heard and to relieve oneself of this burden is so strong that you're willing to accept the consequences. And in my case, I didn't quite grasp how big and how widespread those consequences would be. I was a little bit naive going into it, but I would do it again in a heartbeat, because the shame and the guilt and the weight that you're carrying is that people don't know. And so as soon as you've come forward and said, now I've spoken my truth, people will know. It's worth any price.
Is there any way you can describe what it feels like to be in the middle of a media storm like this?
I don't know that there is an adequate way to describe it. And I've tried in the months since to explain to people how traumatic that was. My marriage in itself was traumatic on its own. Telling that story the way that I did in my blog post was cathartic, but also traumatic on its own. And now here is this third, exponentially stronger trauma of this magnoscope or magnifying glass, as you said, being put onto my life and onto my words and onto, you know, he said, she said, what's true and what's not. And I still sometimes have some PTSD-like symptoms when I'm worried that my name might come up in a story. And I think that's part of why I've connected so much to what's happening to Dr. Ford, is because I'm reliving it through what people are doing and saying about her. I'm reliving it watching the political pundits just make, in my opinion, really dehumanizing and insensitive comments as though she is some sort of political tool and not a human being who has been traumatized and who is upending her entire life in order to come forward and tell the truth. And it just reminds me so much of how disconnected and dehumanized I felt during that media cycle.
How did you, it's now been about 7 months, mm-hmm. How are you doing and how are you able to feel like you're getting yourself back?
The first couple of months were a low point. I think both the aftermath of having been in the middle of the media storm, but then also just recognizing who your friends are. I lost some people in the midst of all of it, and some other people revealed their true colors, and I started to see a bigger picture of how, you know, this web in D.C. plays out. And so those first couple of months were really low and really isolating. I had also just recently relocated to New York, and so I was building, you know, my new support group and my new network up here, and so it was even more isolating in that way. And it wasn't probably until about a month or two ago that I took a deep breath and said, you know, now it's time to get my life back. Now it's time for me to move forward past this. This is no longer going to be the defining moment in my life. I'm going to continue to move forward from here.
When you hear people saying that Dr. Ford's story is politically motivated, what's your reaction to that?
I have a very strong visceral disgust to that because it is taking a person with a real and valid trauma and turning them into a tool. It is showing the lack of concern and lack of compassion that some of these people have for a person who has lived through something traumatic. And in my opinion, it's really, I guess, immature, self-important to assume that there is a person who has so little going on in their life and in their own personal narrative that they are going to take the time to tear down someone else in this way because they're not realizing how much is on the line for her. And when they talked about me as a political tool, as though I was coming forward because I had something against my husband or something against Donald Trump or something against the administration, is just so disgusting. It's really, you know, get out of your DC bubble. Look at the bigger picture. Do you really think that there are people who are dedicating their lives and taking that much time to tear down something like that? It's political theater and it's disgusting to me.
I know that you said you have reached out to Dr. Ford. Are people reaching out to you?
No one, in terms of somebody who's been in a similar situation in the spotlight, no one ever reached out to me. And I actually just had a conversation with a very good friend a couple of weeks ago, and he was shocked how few people reached out to me. And I think that just goes to show you how disconnected and dehumanizing it is when you're thrust in the media like that. People almost think you're not real. And the only thing I can equate it to is perhaps being like a celebrity, right? That the public somehow feels like they own you and know you, but at the same time, you're still very disconnected. And so I had no lawyers, no PR people, no people who had been in similar positions, very few public personalities, and I was sort of left on my own.
And now, do you still feel like you're on your own?
I'm rebuilding. I'm rebuilding with a different, I guess, outlook and a different mindset. And so I think in some ways, yes, I'm on my own, but I've been able to find the people who are going to be able to support me as I move forward. And for me, I think that's why it was so important for me to reach out to Dr. Ford, because I don't know what her personal situation is and what her support circle was like and how personally she had prepared to come forward with this moment. I did not have any foreknowledge to be able to prepare and come forward in that moment, but I think that she did, and I wanted to make sure that she knew that I got it. I had been there. I was not just some external person commenting on her life and her motives. I remembered what it felt like to be isolated in my home, to be unable to open my email, to be terrified to turn on the news. I know what that felt like.
there's been a great deal of focus right now on Dr. Ford testifying publicly. What do you think she should do? And if you were faced with a similar situation and going in front of a Senate committee, what would impact the way you made that decision?
I think the decision is sort of made for you in terms of feeling compelled to tell the truth. And at this point, now that her name is out, now that her story is out, now that the ball is rolling, as it were, I feel like it's almost a compulsion. She has to go and tell the truth. That's me projecting myself onto her. I don't know that that's exactly how she's feeling, but it would feel as though the narrative was unfinished if I didn't continue to speak out and can carry it through to the end. And the way, I think, from what I've read, that she and her attorney are handling it, I think, are exactly right. It's to make sure that she's as prepared and supported as possible. I was a child when Anita Hill was in a similar position, and I remember, even though it's vague and I didn't personalize it the way that I am now, I remember how the committee was treating her, and I remember the way that it was spoken about in the media, and it was a similar sort of dehumanizing thing, as if she was being used as a tool and was on trial for coming forward and doing exactly what those confirmation hearings are for, which is to determine character and to determine eligibility. And so I know that what Dr. Ford is doing is coming forward, doing the right thing to make sure that in appointing someone to the highest court in the land, all pieces are considered and that you're confirming someone based on the full picture.
So Jenny, for women who are listening now, who maybe have gone through something similar, are wondering what they should do, could you give some advice?
Tell the truth. Speak. For me, it started in speaking with the FBI. It continued when I wrote a post and shared it somewhat anonymously on the internet. And as soon as I did that and started to feel the strength and the support, I was willing to speak. And for the healing process, for the ability to let go of that shame and that hurt, I think speaking it and putting a name to it and releasing it from within yourself is the quickest and fastest way to healing. I was at an event recently where a gentleman was talking about coming out of trauma from his own life, and he said he was worried that people would hurt him for speaking out or kill him or even shame him. He put shame at the top of the hierarchy of what would happen if he spoke out. And I want to tell people, I want to tell anyone in a situation of abuse or trauma where they're worried about the power or the influence of the person that you're about to speak out about, it's the shame that's controlling you, not that person. And the shame dissolves with speaking.
Jenny Willoughby, thank you so much for coming and sharing your story with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Jenny Willoughby is a writer and public speaker. She was married to White House Staff Secretary Rob Porter and wrote about the abuse he perpetrated against her in the viral blog post, Why I Stayed, published in April of last year. You can hear more of Jenny's story on the WNYC Studios podcast, United States of Anxiety. Their new season, out now, is about gender and power. Victims of sexual assault put a lot on the line when they come out with their stories of abuse. And you've been sharing your stories. For many, silence feels like the only way.
I never came forward because you can't undo what's been done. And the price of going forward was too high. And I'm in Eugene, Oregon.
This is Allison from San Diego. And no, I've not been brave enough to share my own story publicly. The thought of exposing myself in that way and to have to relive the events, that's been really stressing me out these past few days as I watch what's happening to Dr. Ford.
For some victims, there's a fear that they won't be believed.
This is Jennifer calling from Buffalo, New York. I was assaulted by a family member. My mother knew, but I never told anyone else in the family because they knew they wouldn't believe me.
And then there's the fear of being smeared or silenced.
This is Leslie from Omaha. I and several other people I know have spoken out about certain men in our local convention scene for assault, rape, but they're charming sociopaths. The response is always, well, he hasn't assaulted me, and they get away with it.
And finally, for many, there's a catharsis that comes with speaking and owning the truth.
I was raped when I was 18, and it took me several years of hearing the different experiences of others to realize that, yes, I was raped.